You're listening to Streaming Justice, a live four-hour webcast exploring civil rights accomplishments, challenges, and dreams for the future, and hosted by teens from throughout the region at SLB Radio Studios in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
The Children's Crusade, 1963. In 1963, Birmingham, Alabama was the most segregated city in the whole country. Many people considered that if the civil rights movement were to make headway in Birmingham, it would bring a lot of the country with it. The Ku Klux Klan ran rampant freely, and the police commissioner, Bull Connor, while not necessarily a Klan member, was very harsh to protesters, putting them down as soon as they made an appearance and violently oppressing them if he couldn't contain them. It was this and other worries that stopped adults from protesting and getting arrested, even telling Martin Luther King Jr. no when he came and made a speech to get them motivated. There was just too much for them to risk. But while MLK was unsuccessfully trying to get the Birmingham adults into action, civil rights leaders Reverend James Bevel and Dorothy Cotton were talking to the elementary and high school students about nonviolent protests. Cotton says, "We knew that they were curious about what was going on in their town. We were not there to recruit them. They just started hanging around, coming around, and it swelled. The kids knew that they were not being treated equally, and they saw the chance to do something about it." Freeman Habrowski III said, "Children knew, children of color were well aware we were considered second class. They wanted a protest of their own. They wanted to march downtown and talk to the mayor about segregation." Despite being forewarned about police brutality, the children's resolve didn't falter. "We were told what to expect when we marched. If we did encounter the police, they might hit you, they might spit on you, they will have dogs and billy clubs, but the only appropriate response ever is no response or a prayerful response." This is Carolyn McKinstry, a student protester. "It was such an excitement in the air, I knew I wanted to be part of it." When King was ready to give up and leave, Cotton and Bevel went to him and told him to wait, that they had the people who were eager and willing to march. The only problem was that these potential marchers were between the ages of 6 and 18, not full adults. After several days of deliberation, King and other civil rights leaders finally agreed the kids could march. Dr. King was severely criticized for allowing the children to be involved, but the children insisted themselves. The children were their own self-initiators of their own freedom. They said, "This is our future, and we want to help shape it," says Reverend Virgil Wood, one of the leaders. The children were so convinced that many of them didn't even tell their parents, knowing they would resist. Others stated quite simply to their parents that they were going, no matter what. One unnamed boy said to his father, "Daddy, I don't want to disobey you, but I've made my pledge. If you try to keep me home, I will sneak off. If you think I deserve to be punished for that, I will just have to take that punishment. I'm not doing this only because I want to be free. I'm also doing it because I want freedom for you and Mama, and I want it to come before you die." On Thursday, May 2nd, nicknamed D-Day because children ditched school, Birmingham's youth poured out of their schools in droves, marching in line and singing. The police, led by Bull Connor, rushed to the scene and started arresting as many of the kids as they could. Once the wagons were filled up, they moved them into buses and carted them off to prison. Habrowski says, "The police looked so mean, it was frightening. We were told to keep singing these songs, and so I'm singing, 'I ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, keep on walking, keep on talking, marching on to Freedom Land.'" And amazingly, the other kids were singing, and the singing elevates when you can imagine hundreds of children singing, and you can feel a sense of community, a sense of purpose. The next day, Friday, May the 3rd, 1,000 more children poured out of the schools and marched. This time, though, because the prisons were already full, Connor ordered his men to pull out the fire hoses and dogs. McKinstry says, "The water came out with such tremendous pressure, and it's a very painful experience. You've never been hit by a fire hose, and I thought, whoa. You know, I got knocked down, and then we found ourselves crouching together and trying to find something to hold on to. People ran, people hid, people hugged buildings or whatever they could to keep the water hoses from just knocking them here and there." 600 of the kids were arrested, and with the prisons full, they were stuck together in the deserted fairground. The adults, inspired by their children, soon joined in the protests and kept them going for several more days. Once the rest of the world heard of what was going on in Birmingham, over 200 reporters arrived, catching the brutality of the police and the bravery of the children in action. Politically shamed, the local government wanted this to end as soon as possible, and were therefore more willing to listen to what King had to say. Not only did the march push the government to react, it also motivated people all over the country to stand up for civil rights and keep going in the face of opposition. Millions of Americans who had been seeing demonstrations for years and saying, "Well, there's something wrong about that, and we should do something, but it's not for me, it's for somebody else." That broke down those emotional barriers when they saw those children suffering it, and millions of people said, "I need to do something about this," says Taylor Branch, author of a book on King. He admits that he was one of those people. "I was 16, and doing my best to avoid the fearful civil rights movement, and when I saw the pictures of those kids half my age singing songs just like the ones I sang in church, marching into those dogs and fire hoses, it had a tremendous effect on me." This march, commonly known as the Children's Crusade, not only pushed Martin Luther King Jr. into a better position, but also shows what can happen if youth get active in current events. Hopefully we will never forget these amazing children and their bravery in the face of such unrelenting opposition. Music also had a big role to play in all of this. Every single protest that went on during the 5 days included some form of singing, bonding the children and adults together, keeping them calm even when they were being attacked, keeping the protests nonviolent. It seems as though every protest has songs. So, Lily and Sarah. Sometimes simple common songs like "Row, Row, Row Your Boat" or "Michael, Row the Boat Ashore," and changing the lyrics. What do you think the purpose of songs while protesting is?
Well, I think the children definitely showed notable resilience, and one boy even said to his father, "Daddy, I don't want to disobey you, but I have made my pledge. If you try to keep me home, I will sneak off. If you think I deserve to be punished for that, I'll just have to take the punishment. And I'm not doing this because I want to be free. I'm also doing it because I want freedom for you and Mama, and I want it to come before you die." And I think song definitely played a significant part in really giving this communal singing was shedding a light on the movement. And when people sang together, they walked together, they marched together, they sang in prisons together, and song became this universal movement in its own.
Well, I think music is something that really everyone can connect to, and especially for children, you know, who would definitely be able to relate to the cause more with catchy things like songs. It really brings everyone together in something that they can all remember and, you know, unite with.
How about, what do you think it would take for you to join a protest such as this, one where you knew you'd at least be arrested, but also perhaps harmed, spat upon, and degraded?
Well, you know, the children who were coming out of the church, they were coming out two by two, and they were arrested. They were kept, I mean, the police were arresting the kids, but more kids were still coming. And, you know, it just goes to show that nonviolent resistance really was his vision, Martin Luther's vision, during this time, and it really worked. I mean, after all these protests in Birmingham, they didn't have any more room in the jails for kids, and I definitely think that by sticking together in numbers, through song, through this resilience, that, you know, I would definitely, I mean, going back in time, definitely join with this movement.
Well, risking so much for a movement like this, it would have to take something you're really passionate about to be so involved. And kids these age, you know, they weren't aware of probably the gravity of the situation at the time, but they could definitely tell by seeing everything that was going on. You know, it would take a lot, definitely something like a really driving force, but you can tell through their actions the passion that people like Dr. King had, and even people like Malcolm X, that they really believed in the cause that they were fighting for. So it would take a lot.
Yeah, and the classes from the high schools in that area, you know, the marches weren't led by an official organized regimen. They were led by the class presidents and, you know, the cheerleaders and football players and ordinary kids as well. It was spread by DJs at black radio stations, so it was not something that was very popularized. It was a word of mouth type of thing, and that's what also made it so effective.
I think that shows how passionate about, you know, everything that they were, that they organized this themselves amongst students, like, thinking about how old I am and thinking about me having to do something like that, like, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
It was definitely, yeah.
And now I think that really,
you know, leads us into nonviolent resistance and Martin Luther King's vision. You know, there was this philosophy that he labored over, and it went back past the Montgomery boycott, but the Montgomery boycott was really his ticket into the civil rights movement. And so many weren't sympathetic with this movement. Leaders like Malcolm X took a more aggressive approach, a much different approach. But contrary to some beliefs, nonviolence is not a passive movement. It's a mentally aggressive and mentally resilient movement. And you know, you have to think about how much strength it would take to fight hate with love, to love the people that were throwing rocks at you, and, you know, to not want to hate someone, but to show them forgiveness. And the music of the civil rights movement stems from that. You know, it had this empowering effect, as great an effect as Martin Luther King wanted it to, and song embodied, you know, the African-American struggle, and often, you know, rallied the masses together. And I think I wanted to start by talking about This Little Light of Mine. It's a pretty prevalent song. It's been made into picture books, and children sing it in Sunday school, but this song had so much significance during the civil rights movement, as did many others. And we're so influenced by music every day. For all the music lovers out there, you know how a song can make you feel instantly happy or sad. And during the civil rights movement, song had passion and purpose.
So what was the bigger meaning of This Little Light? What really gave it meaning?
Well, the light in This Little Light of Mine was a march song, and every person in that march thought of their individual light being offered to something greater. And everywhere someone went, they would let that light shine. You know, we're giving the first taste of music during the civil rights movement right away, and here's This Little Light of Mine brought into the movement by influential figure Fannie Lou Hamer.
Oh!
song about struggle and overcoming segregation was perhaps one of the most effective parts of the nonviolent resistance Martin Luther King Jr. wanted. And when people did this communal singing, it literally broadcasted the movement. If police marched into a nonviolent protest, singing was a common barrier against those violent officers with tear gas and dogs, and singing words of freedom was used in the Birmingham school children protests, as we talked about earlier, as children marched out two by two while singing. And as the police arrested those singing children, more children just kept coming out two by two, marching and singing. Music gave people courage. Their music was influenced by decades of mistreated people, going all the way back to the time of slavery and Frederick Douglass. And in his autobiography, Frederick Douglass writes about the significance of singing by slaves. And he says, "I did not, when a slave, understand the deep meaning of those rude and apparently incoherent songs. I was myself within the circle, so that I neither saw nor heard as those without might see and hear. They told a tale of woe, which was then altogether beyond my feeble comprehension. They were tones loud, long, and deep. They breathed the prayer and complaint of souls boiling over with the bitterest anguish, and every tone was a testimony against slavery." And "We Shall Overcome" is another one of the most powerful songs of the 20th century, not only the civil rights movement. If you go somewhere in the world today and there's a movement for equal rights, somebody is singing "We Shall Overcome." It's that influential. And those words brought about reform all over the world. The roots come from African-American hymns in Deep South churches, and it was first used as a protest song in 1945 when striking tobacco farmers in Charleston, South Carolina, sang it in their picket line. During the civil rights movement, this was another anthem, a common song to hear during protest marches and sit-ins. It was sung in jail cells and under police violence. "We shall overcome." You know, what could be more simple than that? It's so universal because it's so simple. Most importantly, as it relates to Martin Luther King, he took so much influence from this song, and just 4 days before he was assassinated, Dr. King delivered one of his last speeches. "We shall overcome" is in almost every single line.
So, Lily, I have a question. Is that how you think that these hymns tie into Martin Luther King? Like, do you think that the hymns really have a connection to his vision overall?
Oh, definitely. You know, he took much of his influence from Gandhi, nonviolent protesting, and nonviolent protesting was not something willy-nilly people did on the street. This was a trained performance. It was not something that was not rehearsed.
Yeah, it took a lot of diligence.
It did, and you know, you really had to know. You could not abandon the people you were next to.
So these hymns really brought everyone together and, you know, mm-hmm. provided a sense of community, I guess, which is definitely something that Martin Luther King would be looking for.
Mm-hmm. I think when you're singing a song, you can concentrate on the song, not just listening, not just be oblivious of what's going on, the hate that's around you. Mm-hmm. You can concentrate on the people around you and the people who are with you.
Well, there's a difference between mindlessly repeating lyrics and definitely, like, meaning every word you say. And they definitely meant every word that they sang when they sang songs like "We Shall Overcome."
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's so beautiful because it's so simple. And his speech right before he died, he said, "Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. You know, I've joined hands so often with students and others behind jail bars singing it. We shall overcome. Sometimes we've had tears in our eyes when we joined together to sing it, but we still decided to sing it. We shall overcome. Oh, before this victory's won, some will have to get thrown in jail some more, but we shall overcome. Don't worry about us. Before the victory's won, some of us will lose jobs, but we shall overcome." And now we're going to give you a sample of one of the earlier versions of this song, "We Shall Overcome."
One family, one planet, one world. Yeah, listen up. One family, one planet. We can't turn and walk away.
If we're really wise, we'll compromise and we'll overcome someday.
This is no time for excuses. Step up and let freedom ring.
We gotta keep the dream of hope alive like Martin Luther King.
Do the song. So many hearts, people and lands, sharing the world, but acting like strangers.
Asking for peace and justice in the world. He said we shall overcome.
Sing with me. We share the dream of Martin Luther King. We share the hope that lives forever. We share the love, and that is why we sing. We share.
Would you like to sing We Shall Overcome?
If you're just joining us, this is Nico Chiodi. I'm 14, and I'm from Chiodi Homeschool.
This is Lily Oppenheimer. I'm 18 years old, and I'm a senior at Mount Lebanon High School.
I'm Sarah Thomas. I'm 17 years old, and I'm a junior at Brownwood High School.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, Music and Conversation about Civil Rights, Past, Present, and Future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day. If you like what you're hearing, please consider letting other people know that Streaming Justice continues until midnight at slbradio.org.
All right, we're going to take a call now from, in a few minutes, from a man who runs a tour of places along the civil rights path, so places where really important events happen, which I think is pretty cool, so you can actually go back and, you know, look at really special places in history. Well, one of the most important things about this era to think about is just the strategy of civil disobedience itself. You know, we've seen this a couple times before with Gandhi, and there were definitely precedents to Dr. King, but he really exemplified the power that it can have. You know, it was really showed on the American stage compared to, you know, other places in the world that it's been seen, and it's important because it can show how powerful nonviolence can be. I mean, Lily knows a bit about that.
Mm-hmm. Because definitely, yeah. A famous quote by Dr. King is, "Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that."
So instead of fighting fire with fire, I don't think that was Dr. King's motto.
No, definitely not.
And a lot of the tactics used in the civil disobedience, you know, were really spearheaded by, you know, younger people. And there was some generational differences with this because, you know, there was the young generation participating in sit-ins and then the older generation that, you know, was sort of caught at odds in between, you know, two different eras. And the sit-in movement was really powerful and, you know, a great example of this nonviolence because it showed that the sacrifices some of these people were willing to make, you know, they were risking arrest, abuse, even just for sitting somewhere that they weren't supposed to be. And there's a lot of examples of this throughout the civil rights movement. Just willing to risk everything, I think, is just a great example of how passionate they were for their cause. Any thoughts, Nico?
I know I read about a girl who had participated earlier in a lunch cafeteria sit-in and was arrested, and she was very frightened about going back to jail. But it didn't stop her from joining the Children's Crusade. Even the fear of being arrested sometimes overcame what they were going through.
I was actually reading this thing. One of the men who first participated in one of the sit-ins in Nashville actually said that he felt like he gained a sense of manhood after he participated it, you know, in the movement, because he just felt like there was so much overall respect coming from the Black community after, you know, engaging in something, like, so important that he felt like he gained his manhood from it, which, you know, I can see where he's coming from. Okay, well, I guess our interview's ready now, and this is a very important man. His name is Todd Allen, and he runs the tour of a civil rights tour in the South that stops at important landmarks. So this will be interesting to talk to him.
Well, we appear to have lost him.
And Todd, where are you?
We'll get him back.
Todd, come back.
We're going to ask about his connection to this project, why he's doing this, what he and others get from the experience. I mean, traveling throughout the South when, you know,
in the hot South in the summer, that must be intense.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot of work.
And going to all of the old, you know, the old Southern states, what they get from the experience and what still needs to happen in some areas in terms of civil rights.
There's definitely a lot of progress for the future. Actually, all right, he's ready now, so let's talk to Todd.
Hello?
Hi, Todd.
Hi.
Hello? Who am I speaking with?
This is Lily Oppenheimer. I'm from Mount Lebanon High School.
All right. Pleasure to talk to you.
And I'm Sarah Thomas, and I go to Brentwood High School.
Hi. Pleasure to talk to you as well.
And I'm Nico Chiodi, and I'm homeschooled.
Alrighty, and pleasure to talk to you.
We've been waiting for you, Todd.
Well, I'm glad I could be here.
Sorry. What's your connection to this project? Did you grow up in the South, and why are you doing this?
I did not. Actually, I'm from right here in western Pennsylvania. Beaver Falls is my hometown. And I was born a little after this time in history. But I grew up learning about this history in school. And honestly, I thought that everybody had been learning about this history. But I come to find out in my life that not so much. And so about 13 years ago, I founded a group called the Common Ground Project, and we started doing these tours called Returning to the Roots of Civil Rights as an opportunity for people from all over the country to go to many of these key southern sites of the movement and to experience this history for themselves.
So what do you think about high schools being named after Robert E. Lee and Southern generals during the Civil War era? You
jumped right in on the difficult question. I do understand that it's a very conflicted history, and I know that in some places people have sought to remove those names and, in fact, replace them with names from the Civil Rights era. Mm-hmm. I think Selma provides an excellent example. The motto of their city, Selma, Alabama, is from Civil War to Civil Rights and beyond. And what they're attempting to do is actually one of the things I'm attempting to do, is to, not gloss over the pain of the past, whether that was in moments of Civil War or Civil Rights, but to find out how we can, in studying that past and be informed about that past, make for a better present or future. So I don't think it's as simple as just removing a name or adding a name to a building. I think it's much more complicated than that. I think it's about being truthful about our shared past and how we can move forward.
Definitely not glossing over it. Okay, Todd, I have a question. What do you feel like you get from the experience in running the tour every year?
For me personally, it's just been such a blessing, as I said, to be able to take people from all over the country, some who were not alive during this time in history, and others who were, but it was just television images. And I think probably the most powerful thing that people get is the opportunity to actually meet a lot of these veterans. When you have those encounters with Mrs. Juanita Abernathy or Congressman John Lewis or Dr. Terrence Roberts of the Little Rock Nine, that this history becomes very real and very personal for you. And you realize that these individuals were ordinary people just like you and I who stood up when the demands of history required them to do so. And it lets you know that we can do the same thing right now in our present age.
Do you still witness the aftermath of the civil rights movement on these trips?
What do you mean when you say as far as the aftermath?
Well, is there still a lot of pain and, maybe even prejudice? There's probably still prejudice, but...
Oh, yeah. Well, I think Dr. King, in his desire for us to achieve what he called the beloved community, would say, if we look back, in 50 years, we've made a lot of progress in many ways, but there's still a lot of work to be done. Mm-hmm. I think it's people's desire to want to forget those painful moments in our history that cause us to keep repeating them, unfortunately. And as I said before, I think if we're truthful about the pain in our shared past, then we can also be truthful then about where we need to go in the present. And hopefully work for a better collective future.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I'd love to sign up for this tour.
I thought the most interesting was the people you said you get to meet. I thought that was pretty cool, the guy from the Little Rock Nine. That'd be really powerful for sure.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. I'm actually going to be with Dr. Roberts tomorrow. We're going to be out in Harrisburg together.
Do you ever get used to it, seeing them after year?
I don't know if you ever really get used to it. I said, on the one hand, they are people just like you and I. But for me, as one who really loves history in school, Mm-hmm. It's kind of awesome that these figures of history that were in my books or that I saw in films are now friends of mine. It's a neat experience. You know, you go to, let's say, Albany, Georgia, and you're sitting in one of the churches that was used in the movement there. And Luther Harris, one of the original freedom singers, is teaching you freedom songs. I mean, it's just, to me, there's just no better way to experience
that's different from reading,
learn about history.
I think it's great, you know, that we're here today talking because we're not glossing over this. A lot of the history books do, you know, especially with police brutality and Southern brutality. And we love...
Not just the Southern thing.
Oh, yeah, of course. No. It's an American thing.
That's right.
Were you always interested in the civil rights, or if so, when did you first go, I want to teach people about this?
Well, honestly, I had a teacher when I was in high school at Beaver Falls who was teaching this and other chapters of African-American history, and it just always fascinated me. And I honestly believe that that kind of education was going on in classrooms all over the country. I mean, when you're in high school, you kind of only know what's going on in your world, but you think that's what's going on in all of the world. And it was only as I got out into college and into working myself, as I talked to people, I realized not many people knew this period of history as well as one would hope. And so, as I said, I was blessed to actually go on a trip and see some of these places and thought, you know, well, this is a great opportunity to take people to these places. And then over the years, as I said, it's been 13 years, been able to build up some great relationships with movement veterans and with others who have a passion about teaching this history. And so while it's a lot of work, it honestly is one of the most enjoyable things that I do.
So if all of this didn't only occur in the South, why do you only do the tour in the South?
Well, we call the trip Returning to the Roots of Civil Rights. And obviously when people think of the Civil Rights Movement, they tend to think of some of the more dramatic moments, and a lot of those moments happen to take place mm-hmm. in the South. But we take them there to these places where a lot of these veterans still live and get a chance to hear their stories firsthand so that when you return to your home place, and you know, whether that's Pennsylvania, or I've had people come from California, we even had someone come from Australia a number of years ago, so that when you return to wherever you live in this world, you can start looking at your own community with a very critical eye and saying, what are some things here that are good? What are some things that could be better? And what role can you play in making it better? Honestly, if we were to take a tour of quote-unquote civil rights sites, it would probably take us several months because we'd be heading all over this country.
You'd be there for a while.
Yeah.
So most people, like, question themselves, you think, after they go on the tour? Like, what kind of reactions do they have?
They do. I think it's everything from, you know, an awakening. I feel like I said, for those who were around, a remembrance. To others, it's quite shocking. You know, they think of someone like a Martin Luther King and realize that he was a very young man when he started this movement.
Very young.
They're shocked when they found out there were people your age and younger who were leading figures and sacrificed in the movement. So it lets you know that this was a movement not of just, you know, the big names that we typically know or the big organizations that we know, but the everyday ordinary people that made a difference.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes, thank you.
I heard you say before that you you'd love to join me on a trip one day. We take this trip every June, and if anybody is ever interested, they can give me a call at 724-622-0858, and I'd be happy to let them know how they could join this experience as well.
Hey, that'd be great. Well, thank you for that, and thank you for talking to us today.
Thank you.
All righty. You all take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Well, now we're going to talk about celebrating Martin Luther King Day in and around Pittsburgh. What's going on? And one of the great things we've noticed is the Union Project is doing something called Share Your Voice today from 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock. You have to join them to meet new people from diverse backgrounds. It's a community achieved through nonviolence, just like Martin Luther King's vision. And
Together, this is a family-friendly event. Children can participate, and the Union Project will provide hands-on clay activities. It's in East Liberty, and once again, the project is called Share Your Voice from 3 to 6. Also, there's a new oral history exhibit that has opened up at 600 Liberty Avenue. Oral histories from prominent African Americans of Western Pennsylvania will be featured as part of PNC's Legacy Project. They will be displayed again at 600 Liberty Avenue. Touchscreen monitors will showcase timelines and photographs. It is a celebration and educational experience. It debuts today and will be open weekdays 11 a.m. through 3 p.m.
In the Mattress Factory over in the north side, there is a Martin Luther King Jr. birthday bash from noon to 4 today. They're honoring Martin Luther King's enduring visionary spirit. They're letting people in, and you pay what you can, inviting the community to celebrate the life and legacy of one of the world's most significant historic figures, and then to enjoy some delicious birthday cake. You can collaborate on a dream mural, decorate a birthday crown, sample cake, and participate in an admiration exchange.
And I'd love to honor Rebuilding Together organization as they rebuild homes today in the Pittsburgh area. In honor of Martin Luther King, 65 AmeriCorps members serving with Rebuilding Together, along with 15 program alumni, are coming together from 25 different states to perform critical home repair services for veteran and senior citizen homeowners in need. This will happen in the Hazelwood neighborhood in Pittsburgh, and this event is being hosted by Rebuilding Together.
There's a gospel concert today featuring a spoken word artist named Vanessa German, a man named Jim Donovan at the St. Francis University World Drum Ensemble. And the concert starts at 7 p.m. at North Norwin High School, which would be at 251 McMahon Drive in North Huntington. There's no charge, actually, but the donations, if you choose to do so, will benefit the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank and Westmoreland County Food Bank.
At Shenley Park, there is free skating from 1 to 4 p.m. in honor of Martin Luther King.
Also, at the August Wilson Center for African American Culture, teaming up to celebrate Martin Luther King, there is a free family event from 1 to 6 p.m. featuring Haiti's artists envision the natural world. A very interesting exhibit exploring the interaction and interdependence between rural Haitians and the natural world. So from 2 to 3 p.m., enjoy a lecture by noted historian John Ford, and he will present the talk Fostering the Dream, a History and Contemporary Analysis in honor of Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. So today, to conclude, we're going to wrap up with Aretha Franklin's Respect.
I
That was Respect by Aretha Franklin, originally written by Otis Redding. Both influential, but Franklin was the first woman inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1987. She has sold more than 75 million records and 40 top singles. Ushered in on a wave of luscious horns and funky electric guitar, Respect was her number one hit, and she was hailed as the Queen of Soul and Rhythm and Blues. One thing today we forgot to mention was that East Liberty is celebrating today at the Kelly Strayhorn Theater. It's presenting the 5th annual East Liberty Celebrates Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day from noon till 4 p.m. So this is another free event open to the public. The theme of this year is Every Voice Counts, Every Story Matters. So activities are available led by partner organizations that work towards social justice in our community, including MGR Foundation, Garden of Peace Project, Love Front Porch, Union Project, Assemble, and the Literary Arts Boom. So we're going to talk a little bit more about both civil disobedience and the Birmingham school protests.
If you are interested in learning more about the Children's Crusade, the book We've Got a Job is available in the Carnegie Library System, along with a wonderful fiction book by Christopher Paul Curtis called The Watsons Go to Birmingham, 1963. Well, Watsons doesn't talk about the Children's Crusade in particular, it revolves around some of these same issues and same time period in Birmingham. You can also check out the documentary Mighty Times from the library or the PBS video Birmingham and the Children's March available on their website.
Well, one of the reasons I thought Todd Allen's tour was most interesting is because, you know, a lot of these really dramatic, important events happen in the South. You know, some of the sit-ins, like in Nashville, you know, a lot of these involved really young kids. Like, one of the first sit-ins that occurred actually involved four college freshmen, you know, that just tried to eat at a restaurant called Woolworth's. This was in February of 1960, and it really made a dramatic effect, even though all they did was order coffee and donuts in a polite manner. Word really got around, and by the end of the week, there were hundreds of protesters, and by this time, a whole movement had been started.
Wow.
So it can just go to show that something really small, like the gravity of, you know, the time period, how, you know, important something like that was. And it's crazy to think that, you know, there were segregated restaurants and segregated everything. I can't even imagine that.
It wasn't that long ago either.
Sitting here today.
That's the most crazy thing.
I was talking
was
about that.
It was only 50 years.
Yeah, I was talking about that with my dad this morning. Like, somebody, you know, that you know so well, like, that was born, you know, from that time period. Like, they're still here today. It's not too far removed.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at it, you know, from today's perspective, I can't even imagine that. Whereas someone like my grandma, you know, like that was actually a memory for her. That's something that she can recall and recount and, you know, talk about today.
And the decisions we make today and what we support, you know, you have to think back to, if I were in that time period, would I have supported this? And I think all of us, the answer is yes in this studio. And, you know, especially how that relates to us today with supporting what's going on in Washington and in our country.
It really makes you take a look at yourself, you know, when looking at issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, do you want to be the one remembered in the history textbook as conservative, or do you want to be, you know, for the cause, you know, and that future generations will look back and think, oh, like, they were, you know, sort of ahead of the game, they were the more liberal ones, or do you want to be looked upon as conservative? So that's always something to keep in mind. And it really makes you think about the future, you know. There's still issues going on today. Obviously, you know, there's issues, you know, like Islamophobia and sexism. I think we could really use some leaders like Dr. King, you know, that showed just a lot of strong leadership skills. And possessed, like, a lot of good qualities that more people could use today.
Yeah, Martin Luther King took much of his influence from Mohandas Gandhi and wrote that nonviolence is a courageous confrontation of evil by the power of love. And I think many leaders could, I mean, allow their actions today to be influenced by their votes in the White House, supporting them there, and not necessarily always by their true beliefs. So I think that Martin Luther, it was, you know, it was all or nothing. This was so more important than anything else.
Well, and yeah, he wasn't worried about a reputation or what everyone else was going to say about him, obviously. He was just went about it with the best intentions, you know, with a really just, like, strong and passionate drive. And look where it ended up.
led to the Civil Rights Act of 1964 mm-hmm. and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And President Johnson, when he signed, just to go back to the songs again, We Shall Overcome, President Johnson used that reference at the end of his speech. And I thought that was very powerful as well.
I think that if I lived during this time period, I really would have, you know, looked upon civil disobedience really skeptically, thinking like, oh, that's not going to work. You know, they're not using guns, they're not using any force. But, you know, in the long run, looking back, you can see how like powerful of an effect that really had.
It politically shames the people who are using force, forcing them to rethink about what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
By if you're sitting down and they're attacking you, you're not the bad guy.
And there's definitely a mental aggressiveness to that. As I said before, I mean, it is not just out of the blue. You have to be prepared. You have to stand by the people you're marching with. You have to be ready to sing and not break apart for anything.
Right.
And it's definitely not a passive movement. So, you know, I think that's definitely something we thank Dr. King, Gandhi, all of those influences for today.
Well, most protesters had a code of conduct, actually, you know, that they were mostly agreed upon. They weren't supposed to curse back. They weren't supposed to strike anyone. You know, they weren't supposed to really fight fire with fire. And this was the mentality that they went into the protest really having. So I think that shows a lot for the mental aggressiveness.
When the children first marched, the adults were standing by watching. And as they were attacked by the fire hoses and the dogs, the adults started throwing rocks.
Mm-hmm.
But the leaders, the adult leaders, told them no, because now you look bad.
Mm-hmm.
It escalates the violence, which is exactly the opposite of what King was trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his nonviolence principle, you know, definitely one can resist evil without resorting to violence. And you want to win friendship and understanding. You don't want to humiliate the people who you may misjudge you. And evil itself is opposed, not people who are influenced by evil acts. You can't suffer. People committed to nonviolence must suffer without retaliation. And nonviolent resistance avoids like external violence, but it also avoids like internal violence, you know. And the sixth principle Martin Luther talks about is that you have to have a deep faith in your future. And during the years after the bus boycott, you know, started, when Rosa Parks mm-hmm. refused to get up from that bus, he was increasingly committed to this nonviolence. Yeah.
I think it's important to remember that, you know, today isn't just a snow makeup day like it was for my school. It's
yeah.
actually something that you really need to, like, appreciate and think about.
Mm-hmm.
Because that, you know, as time goes on, as generations, you know, sort of, you know, move on with their lives, it's not something to just have a snow makeup day for. This is definitely something that you need to learn about and take lessons from.
Yeah, what school do you go to?
I go to Brentwood, so shout out to Brentwood for that.
Brentwood School had school today. Shame. Mount Lebanon is off, so that's a good thing.
Well, we have some speakers coming up next, don't we?
Yeah, our next hosts we're going to introduce are Eliana Paljug and Brenna Kars. So we're all under the organization Pittsburgh Youth Media, and feel free to find out more about us at pittsburghyouthmedia.org. Thank you so much. Happy Martin Luther King Day, everyone.
Happy Martin Luther King Day.
Happy King Day.